I'm going to be speaking about primarily about coffee for Pesach, and we'll talk for a minute at the end about tea as well. The questions are the same. The coffee beans or tea leaves in and of themselves are not chametz or kidneys, and in and of themselves are not a concern for Pesach. And we're going to discuss that there are five processes we're going to talk about that are done to the coffee beans, of which three of those processes potentially raise a Pesach concern. So we're going to talk through the couple of processes. It'll take us just a couple of minutes. And then we'll be able to understand what it is that would or would not make a specific brand of coffee acceptable or not acceptable for Pesach. Before I begin, I do just want to mention that regardless of whether a specific brand is or is not acceptable for Pesach, it is definitely appropriate that a person should start with a fresh jar, just like we'll start a fresh jar or container of anything for Pesach, because during the year, the jar that you use, you stick things into it and things might fall into it, so whatever brand you're using, for whatever reason you decide something is kosher for Pesach, without a question, that needs to be a fresh jar. Two of the processes that are done to coffee that do not pose a concern, I'm mentioning them just to put things in perspective, is the roasting of the coffee bean. That is to say, the beans come off the ground green, and they get roasted, which helps draw out the flavor and turn them brown, like we're all familiar with. And a second step that happens later on is that the coffee has to be brewed. After you roast the beans and you grind them up, they then have to be cooked up to bring the flavor into the water. Sometimes the coffee we buy in the store is already brewed. That is what we call an instant coffee, meaning it's been brewed in the factory, and then they turned it back into a powder. Excuse me. Or other people buy freshly ground coffee, which is, it's been roasted, but they didn't brew it, and then you brew it at home to get a fresher cup of coffee. Okay, those are two processes that, when they're done in a company, are done on equipment that's basically just for those things, and we don't have a concern, there's nothing added to them, we don't have a concern that those, a concern of those for Pesach. But there are three other processes that we're going to talk about that potentially do raise a concern. They are decaffeinating the coffee, drying the coffee, and flavoring the coffee. Decaffeination is the first one. Beans, even before they're roasted, if a company would like to make decaffeinated coffee, that's the first thing that's done to the beans, even before they get roasted. The beans are still green, and what they do is they use some different kind of water or some different chemicals to get the caffeine out of the beans. They soak the beans in hot water or hot chemicals, and the caffeine that's in the bean leaches out of the bean and goes into the water. And there's a number of different chemicals that could be used, of which one of them, which is called ethyl acetate, is potentially chametz. So here you're cooking the bean in this hot liquid, which might be chametz, that potentially makes my bean, my decaffeinated coffee bean, chametz. Even if they don't use ethyl acetate directly on the bean, sometimes they use just water, and you say, oh, water, what could be wrong with putting water, just some hot water onto my bean? That'll get the caffeine out. But in the later, sort of in the back of the factory, they're purifying that water with other things that might be chametz. So if the coffee is decaffeinated, you have to know what's going on in the company. What are they doing in the company? What ingredients they use to decaffeinate it to know whether they made my beans chametz just by drawing out the caffeine. So the first rule we're going to say is that if coffee is decaffeinated, it for sure needs some kind of a hashgacha for Pesach, either a hashgacha or someone who can vouch and say, there's no hashgacha, but I can tell you that the process they use doesn't raise any concerns. That's the first. Now we have our beans, either regular or decaffeinated beans, and in some companies they brew the coffee. As I said, they brew the coffee in the company, and then they don't want to sell you a cup of liquid coffee. They want to turn it back into a powder. That is to say, they dry out the liquid. They boil out all the liquid, or they remove all the liquid from the brewed coffee and turn it back into a powder that they could sell to you as what we call instant coffee. How do they get the water out of the coffee? How do they get the water out of the brewed coffee? So it turns out that there are two basic ways to get the water out. One way to get the water out is through what's called spray drying. Spray drying means you spray the water into a fine mist, into a huge chamber that's boiling, boiling hot, and it's so hot in there that when the liquid sprays into this chamber, it immediately, all the water boils out of it. And by the time it hits the floor, it's already a powder. Okay, that's called spray drying, because you spray the liquid. By the time the liquid hits the bottom of the chamber, it's already turned into a powder. That's one method. That method is cheap, and it's easy, and it's efficient, and it works great. It's just, you just pour the stuff in, and it just goes and goes and goes, and you can sit and spray dry all day long. The other method is called freeze drying. Freeze drying is, it takes at least 24 hours to do it. In very expensive and fancy equipment, you put the liquid, first it has to be frozen, then it goes through a process called sublimation, which is a fancy process that makes it go from being frozen into being a powder without boiling, without heat, a whole fancy process, which takes, as I said, at least a day to do this process. And that makes coffee that's freeze-dried coffee. You've probably heard the term freeze-dried coffee. So, the question is like this. Why in the world would somebody go through the headache of making coffee freeze-dried that takes them all day long, and it takes them, it's so much more expensive if they could just spray-dry it, which was easy and cheap, and it just worked. And as you could probably guess, the difference is in the quality. Freeze-dried retains much more of the flavor, and freeze-dried coffee dissolves in your cup much better than spray-dried coffee does. So the company, it's worth it to go through all that effort to make it freeze-dried instead of making it spray-dried. What does it have to do with us? What am I telling you all these gory details about how to make dry coffee? The answer is that some companies, when they spray-dry the coffee, before they spritz the water into the machine, they add in maltodextrin. They add in something that's probably kidneys and might even potentially be hummus. Very unlikely, but it might even be hummus. They add in some powders to help when it sprays. When they sprayed and they want it to end up being a better powder, they might stick in a powder, something called maltodextrin, something that has been found in companies to be doing. So, therefore, people don't want to have those things, as Robert Fishbein mentioned. People don't want to have kidneys, even if we can come up with a reason why it might be mutter. People don't want to have that in their coffee. So, you can't have spray-dried coffee. And here's where we come to our hands-on demonstration. For those of you who have the samples in front of you, you should have two bags in front of you. The one with an F is for freeze-dried coffee. And the one with the F is spray-dried coffee. And you'll see that if you pick up, the freeze-dried coffee comes out of the machine in chunks, in like little pebbles they look like. And they look like freeze-dried coffee. What can I say? You hold it in your hand, you can see it. The spray-dried comes out of the machinery as a powder. When it comes out as a powder, sometimes they clump it back together. They use a thing called, it's a fancy word called agglomeration. They clump it back together to look like it's freeze-dried. Okay, but it's not freeze-dried. And if you put it into your hand, just pick some of it up, some of the spray-dried coffee up in your hand, you rub it between your fingers, it turns right back into a powder. Okay, which you can't do that to the freeze-dried coffee. It's chunky, it's like little rocks. You can't do that. So, look at a coffee, once you've seen it once, you could pick it out yourself in the supermarket, you could see the brand, you could see the brands which are spray-dried. Those potentially have something mixed into it that's not pure coffee, and those need hashgacha for Pesach. If you have one that's freeze-dried, to date, no one's been adding things into it, it just is what it is. So the freeze-dried coffees, you can be more confident that they have nothing mixed into it. And in fact, in many times, when you're told, you know, this brand is okay and this brand is not okay, what you're being told is, this brand is freeze-dried and this brand is spray-dried. So far what we've gotten is, that if it's not decaffeinated, then we're on safer ground. Now we say, okay, it's not decaffeinated, but is it freshly ground? It's for sure, okay. That's it. No one's drawing that out. It's just ground up coffee beans. And if it's instant, then we have to think about, is this thing spray-dried or is it freeze-dried? And at this point, I believe you could tell yourself which one it is. Last, is that people, even though coffee and tea are great things, people became more sophisticated or decided they wanted even beyond just plain coffee. And an industry built up to make flavored coffees. Okay, and flavored coffees goes by in all different types. There's cinnamon and vanilla and all kinds of interesting things. I found one in looking through this. I don't know what this is, but it's called Vienna Strudel Coffee. Okay, I don't know what that means, but obviously somebody thinks that's good. So what does that mean? They flavor the coffee. What it means is, right before they put the ground up coffee, the instant or the regular, into the bag, someone pours on some flavoring onto the beans. Okay, the flavoring, if it's cinnamon flavored, the flavor probably never saw cinnamon in its life. Okay, it has nothing to do with cinnamon. It's a concoction of some chemicals. And I just, for curiosity, looked on our database at companies that we certify that make these flavors. And one of them made a vanilla flavor. It was very simple. It had just two ingredients. One of them is not so significant, and the other one is probably not common. Another company I looked at their vanilla flavor had 12 ingredients. Then it had a sub-formula that had 26 ingredients. And then that had a sub-formula that had another 13 ingredients. Okay, of those 50 ingredients in total, I went through the 50, just, I was curious, I looked through these 50 ingredients. Of those, we found 9 ingredients that contribute taste to the item. 9 ingredients that contribute taste that are potentially common. One comes from wheat, one usually comes from whiskey, and other ones that come from alcohol. So what would I know? I pick up my French vanilla coffee. It looks just, what could be wrong with French vanilla? It must be from ground up vanilla beans. I'm sure I mixed in there. There was no vanilla beans there. But in this concoction of chemicals, sometimes it could be very simple, or sometimes it could be much more fancy and sophisticated and complex. So, as a rule, we all know, we should know already, that things that are flavored need hashkacha. Koshkin, that they need hashkacha for Pesach. So, we have our three things that we're looking out for. If the coffee is decaffeinated, then we know that it needs hashkacha. If it's not decaffeinated, but it's instant, then we say, this instant coffee, if it's freeze-dried, I'm on safer ground, and if it's spray-dried, then no, I should stay away from it unless I know it has hashkacha. And lastly, if it has a flavoring to it, then I should not, it's not recommended, unless it has, of course, it has hashkacha specifically for Pesach. But just to finish with tea, tea has the same kinds of questions. It also could be decaffeinated or flavored, what we call herbal tea. It's really just flavored tea. Or it says, straight out that it's a flavored item. So again, those would not be used without hashkacha. And if it's just a plain tea that is not decaffeinated and is not flavored, then that would be acceptable. Thank you.
Any questions?